Freebooters. Oh, by the way, I've got until 6 o'clock. So.
Okay.
There we go.
I enjoyed that intro.
It was a good intro. One of the better ones, I think. Yeah. Still yet to do anything with the background, but, you know,
white is a choice, and everybody who doesn't love bubble wrap curtains?
Oh, exactly. Yeah. Well, you can't see the bubble wrap curtains over there.
No. They keep the warmth in.
They keep the warmth in. Absolutely. Right. Okay. So I have no plans to do anything. Like I got nothing for freebooters, by the way.
Okay. Well, I hope you enjoyed this episode.
Yeah. Good one.
So far.
Oh, I'll tell you what I have done, but this is like there. I've made the executive decision to take the email off my website, my email address.
Oh, why is that?
Well, I only ever get emails now from people claiming to be able to put my website higher up Google rankings. That's
well, because I get that, and my email address, I don't think is. Oh, it might be. I'm not sure. I don't think is it. Maybe I don't know.
It might, yeah. So I'm thinking, you know, like most of the time, a lot of people, they just come at me through the Fediverse, and that's fine.
Do you get emails anymore? You know, just emails from people you know that are just correspondence?
No, they usually come through the Fedi.
Yeah. I mean, if I wanted to message you, I just message you on Discord, honestly.
Come through the Discord room. Like, it's not like we're hard to find. But yeah, so I just figured like it still exists, it's still there. You can still
shame. So, I mean, we're both very much on the record as being fans of email, but it does feel. I can't see. There's not many situations in which I could see somebody emailing somebody unless it was a complete stranger, and that's how you're contacting them.
Yeah,
it's a little bit more formal.
Yeah, it's a little bit more formal. It you know, it's fine. And if anyone does want to email me, chrisware@postio.net, like it's totally there, but just putting it like on, I don't know, on the website, it's unabashedly my email address. Like, it's got a mail to link. Yeah, it's got all that stuff. Yeah. Like it gets picked up, and it's like some of the things, I got to be honest, I find it weirdly insulting. My website ranks exactly where I want it to rank.
Yeah.
It's totally fine. Like I got no complaints with that. I don't want to redesign. I like that I've designed it myself. I like that it looks like a picnic.
I love your website. Yeah, every time you redesign it, I think you've got a bit of a flair, I think, for design. And not design, like, you know, not boring, not corporate, just like actual personality. But you do, per a post I was making the other day when I was talking about color stuff, but like you do have that natural eye for color, I think.
I don't know if it's a natural eye. Like, I have like thought about it and tried to learn it and that kind of stuff. And also, like, hex codes make it easy because you can have a theme of color. You just arrange the hex code values appropriately.
Yeah. It's like 33000000333000000033. They're going to look good together.
Exactly. So, I can't really take credit. Like, I haven't done.
I'm going to check that now. Unless I might have said something completely.
No, it does. Yeah, no, I do that. That's my secret. You've worked out my secret.
That's what I do. Yeah, you just make sure, just only vary one of the things is basically it, isn't it?
Yeah. Like, I think it was like F7 for a while. I had like the F7 theme. So it's just F7 in each of the RGB columns.
Yeah.
And just like,
yeah.
So I don't know. Like, it's just, you know, like, I use email a lot, particularly like for formal stuff and correspondence stuff and all that kind of stuff. But I don't know. I just took it off my website because it's like most people get into.
I wish email was more part of what we did. You know what I mean? You know, when you read about people from, like, the, you know, 18th century onwards, and they're just like, you know, they wrote letters to each other. You know, they met up in person, they went to cafe, but also they'd write letters to each other. And it's like, I do wish that, like, had a more sort of long form thought to put to you, put it in an email kind of thing. But just, I know I won't, and it's not how we, I think it would probably feel a bit artificial and weird.
Yeah, that's kind of it, really, isn't it? The world's kind of, I mean, if anyone does want to email me, then fine. But we're in, you know, there we go.
Yeah, like, to be clear, I assume we both like receiving emails. It's not that
I do. Yeah,
receiving emails, but just I don't use email as email anymore. Email is now just, unfortunately, a corporate notification system.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm. So there we go. A correction on yesterday's episode. It's not really a correction, but I do want to set the record straight. Yes, no, you cannot take your Irish email address with you.
License plate, not email address.
Either. You can't take
your email address with you.
You can take your email address with you, not your postcode. Postcode. Did I say email address?
Yeah, you did, yeah.
Fucking hell. All right. Sending in the corrections. Come on.
So now next time we need to correct this one.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. So look forward to things that Chris got wrong segment of the... No, I mean, I corrected it there and then, but yeah, like you can't take your address with you.
Yeah, you don't have like I think you said it for a moment and then you were like, no, that's not right. So yeah.
No, that's ludicrous. How would that even work? You just, you know, citizen number. You could just send an address with...
I mean, thinking about it, it's not the worst idea in the world. It's just not how things work. Like, it would be... Yeah, if you had a postal address that was a unique identifier and you just... Yeah, when you... Yeah, so, I mean, it's what is the referent and what is the information, right?
Okay, so
you need a lookup database, but rather than pointing you to a place, it points you to... Well, it does point you to a place, but the place can move.
Yeah, like so you'd have basically, you'd have like a citizen number, as it were, and you would just have your address assigned to that number so that you put, someone writes the number or the string on like a letter, for example, and then the post office just look that up on a database, and they know who to send it to. That's probably more steps than the post office want to...
Although given how much post we get for 55 High Street, Rochester... Me being in Roaster, not Rochester. I can imagine that. Yeah, even that.
Why did you just dox yourself?
Oh, I did it with the three words thing. It's fine. Everybody knows where I live. If you want to firebomb me, it's the top right window.
Okay.
all throw me presents. Windows open because it's summer, so presents welcome. McDonald's.
Okay.
But if you're throwing a McDonald's through my window, like put it in something. Actually, no, because it will come apart. The burger would come apart, wouldn't it? That'd be unpleasant.
You could reconstruct it. I had a McDonald's the other day. McPlant.
I had a McDonald's the other day. A McMeat.
A McMeat. Have you ever tried the McPlant?
No, I haven't. Because McDonald's is such a treat for me. I feel like I don't want to risk it. Because I tried it. I actually tried it. I got advertised to, actually. Can't remember where I saw it. I saw the McDonald's, you know Philly cheesesteak? You know what that is?
I've heard of it, but I don't know what it is.
A thing from Philadelphia where they ate, I think it's a steak with, I think, squirty cheese, some kind of cheese on it.
Oh, yeah.
In a sandwich kind of thing. Probably not squirty cheese. I probably insulted the whole of Philadelphia. But it was a McDonald's approximation of that, and it was quite disappointing.
Okay.
Like, it wasn't bad. It was just worse than the other things that I could have had. So I was a bit reluctant to experiment at McDonald's. I know what I like, and it's my treat.
Yeah, I get you. Like, I don't really deviate from the standard McPlant, to be honest. I don't know what I could deviate to, the veggie burger deluxe or something like that.
That's probably, yeah. I mean, my go-to is the double quarter pounder.
I always audibly laugh when you're ordering a McDonald's on the terminals now. Oh, because
last time I went.
Yeah. So we got like there are terminals like in like Mass Effect. Have you ever played Mass Effect where you just interact with the terminal? It's a bit like that. And I always audibly chuckle whenever it says, "Would you like carrot sticks or fries for your side?" And like,
you know, they're not even stocking carrot sticks.
Yeah, you don't have fucking carrot sticks.
If you order carrot sticks, an alarm goes off at like 8 p.m. You're like, fuck. What are carrots?
What the fuck are carrots? Yeah, like I remember when I was at a conference in Manchester many years ago, and I hadn't eaten for most of the day. I thought, well, I better get something quick and light before I go to bed. So I went into McDonald's and I ordered a salad. Like, it was on the menu, and I'll never forget the look the girl at the counter gave me. It's just like,
but it's fair. First of all, nobody likes salads. Secondly, if you want a salad, why would you go to McDonald's?
Because it's 1 o'clock in the morning and it's the only place that's open.
Yeah, no, I understand the reality, but yeah, I also understand, yeah, from her.
It was like a Friday night too. It's like, oh yeah, partying up with a salad.
Yeah. Although I used to get that look when, like, towards the end when I was still going out, when I'd given up drinking, but I was still going out to the pub with my friends. And it'd be like, yeah, I was ordering around for everybody. I mean, you know, a couple of whiskeys, a couple of beers, whatever, and a cup of tea, please. And they're just like, oh, for fuck's sake, we're going to make a cup of tea. It's such a hassle in a pub to make a cup of tea.
That's more normal now.
Oh, is it? Okay.
Yeah. Well, in like a lot of the Wetherspoons and Wetherspoons-like pubs, they just give you a cup, and there's like a machine that just dispenses coffee in the corner. So you get, in Wetherspoons, you get free coffee refills. So,
oh, that's fine.
Yeah. I think so.
We just hot water. Yeah.
I think it's like hot drinks. You just get free refills. It's like £1.40 or something.
Someone in that did that, and again, not been out for 20 years, but like was a Little Chef. They used to do free refills. That was great.
I don't think I've ever eaten in a Little Chef because it's always roadside stuff, isn't it?
I don't think they exist anymore. I think they went bankrupt or something. But when I was in sixth form, my girlfriend worked in a Little Chef, so it was free for me.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, and free refills. If you know what I'm saying.
Well, there was... I mean, I can't... No one's can snitch on you now.
What are we tangented from something onto that?
Yeah, I can't even remember what it was now. I've just done a small short shift at work, so I'm a bit like... A little bit fried, so, you know, this might not be the most gripping of rebooters.
I do have a Fediverse gripe.
Okay, Fediverse gripe.
It's something I've whinged about in the Discord, so some people know about it, but I'm going to send you a couple of posts. Find them.
Okay.
That's too far. They weren't that far ago. Hang on.
Okay.
Here we go. Okay, so I saw these two posts in succession on a particular... They were literally next to each other one particular day.
Okay.
So this one and this one.
Okay.
Should we do, like... Do you want a guessing game? See if you can guess what my gripe is.
Okay. All right. One moment. I've just got to fire them up. All right. What I'll do, I'll load them up on the thing as well. Okay. The thing, that's the technical term.
Yeah.
Okay, here we go. And there we go. Okay, and then turning it over with the high tech OBS. All right, so I've got them up. So, okay. We're looking for communities and individuals interested in setting up their own Bonfire instances over the next weeks. We need you to use Bonfire in real-world scenarios, federate with each other and the wider Fediverse to test interoperability, monitor performance under active use. Your feedback will help us get Bonfire Social across the finish line to a 1.0 stable release. We'd be happy to provide guidance throughout the whole process. Please boost or reach out if interested. Is it reach out?
No. I mean, I do hate reach out. Contact is the word. Reach out is corporate PR fucking speak that humans have adopted for some reason. It's corporations started talking that way to sound more human, and then humans started copying corporations, which is it's double absurdity.
Mm-hmm. Okay, please help. OSU, OSL, keep doing the excellent work they do for our communities. Please share this post so they can get the visibility they need. Donating is sadly a little fiddlier, but here. So these were next to each other.
Yeah. I quite often see posts along these lines. These are just examples of the kind of post. But so, it's just so happy that two right next to each other. I was like, fuck's sake.
Is it just like that they're... Sorry, I'm blurring out a little bit as well. Oh, there we go.
It's not your fault.
Is it something to do with the fact that it's like a broadcast medium? Like they're not really engaging with people?
No. It is just, if you're advocating for people to use something or, you know, whatever, take interest in something, and it's something that not everybody will have heard of, say what the fuck it is. Because Bonfire, I don't, from that post, I don't. Maybe I would be the kind of person who would be interested in trying out Bonfire. But first of all, I'd need to know what the fuck it is. This post doesn't say what it is. You click through to their profile, and it says public interest social networks. I don't know what that means. You click through to the website itself. You go to About, building open digital spaces for the commons. We envision a world where all living beings thrive and communities flourish, free from private interest. I still don't know what the fuck it is. There's no point reading any of this. Do I know what the fuck it is? So I give up. Again, it's this vague corporate, it's kind of emotional, humanizing language, but the problem with that is it doesn't tell me what the fuck it is. So so it just makes me angry, and it makes me hate your project. I hate you, Bonfire. Hope you fail. And then same with Osel. I don't know what that is. Maybe it is something I would be interested in supporting if I knew what the fuck it was, but I don't know what the fuck it is.
I don't know. I mean, the picture of the thing is a guy fiddling with some very expensive equipment. I'm assuming it's beyond my pay grade, you know?
Yeah, I'm sure it's much beyond my pay grade as well. But even again, I went to the Osel website, went to that page they linked, then went back to the root of the website, and at no point did I really learn what it is. So yeah, no, if you're advocating for something techie or something political, you know, so the kind of things that aren't commonly known, if there may be if even 10% of the people who might see this, you know, especially when you're reaching out to people, just brackets, just a little Bonfire parentheses what it is, close parentheses, you know.
Yeah. Well,
and again, on websites for these things, say in normal human language, on a technological or whatever level, say what it is. I mean, maybe it's a Fediverse server geared towards organizations. Is that what it is? I don't know. But if it is that, that's the kind of language I'm talking about. Fediverse servers geared towards organizations. That would be a description that I'm
Bonfire.
Happy with.
Yeah.
Is it ecosystem? Just me, or are you sharing me? Like, is this?
I get that it's a whoopsie, like an oversight. Yeah.
But I see so many posts like this. We're celebrating the 1.0 release of blah 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 blah. You know, like we're so proud of all our team. Like, say what it fucking is.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, it's like when you're super involved in a project like that, you tend to take for granted, but. Yeah, no. It doesn't say, like, so I'm assuming that Bonfire is supposed to be like a Fediverse, you know, social network software, right? Like, it interoperates with the Fedi, right?
Yeah, this is the thing. I've genuinely read their entire, I skimmed their main page, I've read their entire about page, and I still don't really know. And is it just another Fediverse server, just a normal...
Okay, you know, I've got one here.
Fediverse server. Is that what it is? So,
Bonfire Social is a federated social app built for people and communities who care about autonomy, meaningful connection, and healthy online spaces. Oxford comma, interesting, approved. It appears familiar. It offers familiar features like feeds and profiles, but goes further with powerful tools for customization, moderation, and control, so you can shape your digital space to fit your needs. Bonfire Social is also a gateway into the broader Fediverse, a network of independent, interconnected apps while staying fully self-hostable and community-governed.
Yeah, see, I still don't really know what that is. Like, I get now that it is a Fediverse server, but I don't really know. Is it just... Yeah, I don't know.
What would you describe, for example, Pixel Fed as? If you were going to do, like, a little blurb, elevator pitch. Instagram. Federated Instagram.
Or if you don't want to use that sort of reference, like federated image sharing.
Yeah, or self-hosted federated.
Yeah, self-hosted federated image sharing. Just something that for a tech literate audience, you know, who this is aimed at, like, would understand what it is. Yeah, not in emotional. Not, you know, it encourages community participation and gives you more tools for, like, I'm not talking about that. I'm just fundamentally what it is.
Do you think what's happened here is that, because this kind of rings a little bit large language models. You know, like it's almost like these things are being described like someone's copied and pasted a big brief into ChatGPT, and they're like, give me, an elevator pitch for this big project.
I don't think that's the problem. I think it's everybody feeling like they have to talk like a corporation and copying the language. You know, when you see big corporate tech projects and they're like, facilitate the open sharing of data objects through, just wishy-washy, vague language. It's aping that and seeing some value in that.
You deliberately go against that with your piece of software that you created called a blorp.
Blorp. About three people use.
What is it on, by the way? Hosted on?
GitLab still.
Microsoft
okay,
GitLab.
Okay, so on the site, on GitHub, on GitLab, whatever, the first line, very simple bash-based static site generator with absolutely no features at all. So that's what it is.
Bash-based static site generator. Maybe I should... I keep meaning to do some writing for my website at some point. And now that I'm settling into my new job, like I'm feeling like I've got maybe a couple of hours at the end of the day now where I'm not completely wiped out. So maybe that might be an opportunity for more freebooters recording if we want to do like more short freebooters or something like that.
Yeah. I think more short ones would be nice. Yeah.
Yeah. And I keep meaning like to learn, either something like Blop or what are the other ones? 11T? Is that another one?
Hugo is one I hear. Hugo. Yeah. What I like about, the reason I made Blop is it is just you make the directory structure correct, you write your new markdown files, and then you just type a command, and then you upload the results to wherever you want to host it. There's no like Ruby. There's no, I have to install Ruby on Rails. There's nothing needed. If you're on Linux, nothing is needed.
Is it like, how does theming work? Use a CSS file or something?
It just inserts the text into it's a template basically. You just make a template and then you theme it however. Basically, whatever you want to do. If you want to go out and use CSS templates or something, you can do that. But it's just it's bare bones. Yeah.
I have a question about your documentation.
Yes.
Is the date on the examples? So you got author Rebecca Black. Title: yes. It's Friday. Date: 2011 March 14th.
Where is I don't see the example date.
It says front matter.
Yep.
Was that the day? Yeah, there we go. All right. Well, I might.
So overrides the date as it. So if you don't put the date in, it'll derive it from the file's modification date, which is imperfect. The format can be anything that the date command, because it's just using the date command. Anything that the date command understands, will work there.
But you're not using it on your current homepage now, are you? Which is what, friendo.monster?
Oh, that's still a block, yeah.
Oh, really? Mm-hmm. Oh my god, I remember the links.
I want to improve how the links animate. I want it to be horrible and chaotic. I want it to look corrupted when you roll over the links. That was the idea, but then I got bored.
Shut the fuck up,
Chris, as far as I went, but I want them to look like corrupt.
I just clicked on my name and it came up with a great... Oh, that's wonderful.
Hang on, wait, what? What did it do with your
name? I clicked on my name on your website and you go, shut up, Chris, you're a Gen Z piece of shit.
Oh,
I'm a millennial!
Yeah, one of them goes to your website.
Shut the fuck up.
Oh, yeah. Chris, I think the first one goes to your website and then that would say, I forgot I did that.
Actually, now that posts, flat packs and stuff, the web doesn't exist. Flat packs stuff. I've stopped using flat packs in favor of DistroBox. You've got me hooked on DistroBox.
DistroBox is great. Yeah, it kind of makes flat pack redundant for me, at least, for my
absolutely time. Yeah. So I've got standard Debian system that I installed like when it came out, or like I don't know. Not long after it came out, And I just keep my base level Debian up to date. And then if I want something a bit newer or a little bit more exotic than what's in the... I just distrobox into Arch. I don't even need to use the AUR. Like, I'd bring in the AUR if it was needed. But yeah, honestly, Arch has probably more up-to-date stuff and, like, more interesting random stuff in its repositories than Debian. Debian's obviously a bit more, I don't know, slow, methodical.
Yeah.
You know, which is, you know, that's the thing you like about Debian, right? Like,
For sure. You know.
But the thing about Arch is that it's a little bit more... fluid. I do wonder. I do sometimes, you know, get curious. Like, what would life be like if I just ran an Arch box? Like, would I? I don't like fixing things nowadays. And
honestly, the you have to fix it thing is overstated. I don't remember the last time I had to fix or there was a broken update. Back in the day, definitely happened more often. But these days, I've not. Especially when you're on open source drivers and stuff like AMD. I remember with NVIDIA occasionally they get out of sync and you had to. But yeah, not a problem in my memory. My memory.
Okay.
But I will say, but then at the same time, if what you've got now, I was going to say, like, the need for Flatpaks is the most minimal, I would say, on Arch, because. Usually Flatpaks you would use for something that isn't packaged or for Arch with the AUR, it's very rare that you can't find something. But on Debian, it's Debian plus Distrobox, so it's Debian, and then anytime you want something newer or just doesn't exist, use the Arch.
Because
you don't need to, like, go into Distrobox and launch it from there. You can just make a launcher that launches.
I've got a shortcut command. And I do the Windows key and R, and that brings up my RSS reader, which is Newsflash, which is actually really fucking good.
And that's the Arch version.
Yeah, and actually, I'll tell you what, I'll do a shout out for this, because I don't do much with RSS, and I think nowadays, if I do want some feeds to read, I'll probably, like, look at my phone. I'm still working out what my RSS reader of choice is on my phone. At the moment, I'm trying out, I think it's Capybara Reader or something, Capy Reader, which has a Capybara as a... But I don't know, I haven't settled in that enough to whether or not I'm going to stay with it. Because, like, a lot of them, to be honest, they're fine. But I think it's Newsflash. I'll just check. A modern open source reader. Yeah, right. So it does have, like, you can hook it into online services. You can hook it into Feedly, Miniflux. I don't know what that is. Feedbin, Newsblur, Fever. Or you can just run it locally, which is what I do. And it's got, like, a very modern... relatively minimalistic, like, it doesn't have a million and one features, but everything just, like, looks as it should do. It's spaced as it should do. You can do that thing where it actually downloads the actual article in it, so you can, even if they only give you, like, the blurb, you click the, like, download the rest of the button and it just downloads, it just strips out.
I want to get into using an RSS reader, and I think I would want one that was relatively simplistic. I don't want a ton of features. I just want open up the feed, read the articles, you know, that's it, really.
Yeah. It's got categories, it's got, like, it works, you know, it's, you know, it doesn't have too much to do. It just is what it is, but it does it well, you know? Because I sometimes find that things with, like, Liferia, like, sometimes the spacing isn't great, or, I don't know, like, it always seems to have a little jank to it. Same thing with this, this one just seems like a proper put-together... Yeah, but I don't use it too much, because I'm not nowadays. I'm not sitting at this computer.
You're working a lot. Yeah,
I'm working a lot.
When they fuck up the spacing or whatever, why are they? Because it's just they're just pulling the web page, aren't they, and then showing it.
I think it's maybe just a dated look or something like that. They just put the website on, but sometimes it's the spacing of the website or the CSS. Sometimes you can run it without running JavaScript and that screws up a website, but, like, you don't want to be running JavaScript in a, you know, RSS browser, because that's just asking for trouble, I guess. And also just takes time to load or whatever. Anyway, Newsflash, I've got it up on the thing here, I think. Yep. And it looks good, and it behaves well, and I don't... It's not in the Debian repositories, but it is in the Arch repositories, just as Arch works a treat. So that's what I use DistroBox for.
That is very cool that, you know, you're on Debian, but you're just using an Arch application that's using the Arch, not the kernel, is it, but the subsystems, and then as far as you're concerned, like, you probably forget.
I do, yeah.
Desktop application.
I've got...
Like, 'cause the problem with Flatpaks is... For something, because when I install something through DistroBox, it always just works. Whenever I install something through Flatpak, it often has problems, and then those problems often turn out to be irresolvable. Essentially, like I remember when I was trying to use Inkscape through a Flatpak.
Oh, you're right.
It was just, I mean, after a while, it just stopped working. But to begin with, like the theming, it just wasn't using my theme, and then there didn't seem to be a fix for that. Like I think I found a couple of fixes that didn't really work.
Are themes a big deal for you?
No, not really, but there was something, it was a particularly ugly theme was the problem. I don't really care about light or dark, or it was just a really horrible theme.
Okay, yeah. Sometimes with Flatpaks, they insist on the theme. I don't even know how the Arch works. I've got like a bunch of Arch applications running. I can't remember which are which. So I think, there's a few things that I use, but I can't for the life of me work out. It should say in the menu or something, Luanthi /mindtest. I run that version on Arch because it's just more up to date. It's more like, it's just an easy way to just keep my Luanthi, previously mindtest. What do you make of Luanthi's new name?
So they've just renamed Mindtest to Luanthi.
Yeah.
Is that one of those words that they've borrowed from another culture or whatever? Or is it a made-up word?
No, it's not a made-up word. It means something like blocks in another language.
I don't like that. I don't like cultural appropriation or anything. It's just... I don't know. Like Marte and, you know, like... I don't know why I don't like that. I just find that a bit... ugly, a bit aesthetically ugly as a practice.
Why not call it mate? You're right, mate.
Exactly. I prefer
Ubuntu,
that,
mate. Yeah. It's like Australian. Ubuntu, Australia edition. Mate.
And mind test. Luanthi, I don't know what the fuck that means. Mind something, I think, would, you know. Mind blocks. There you go.
Sorted. Mind blocks. Mine yours. Boss yours. Mine.
Our test.
Yeah, I get that, like, mind test doesn't sound like it's a complete game. I get why you'd want to...
Well, the question of that is, why call it mind test in the first place?
I think originally it was just like they're testing.
But you change that name quickly. as soon as it's beyond the test, it could change the name.
Yeah. See, that's the thing. I don't care for the, like, whatever name, right? But one of the things I kind of... think is interesting is GIMP, right? Because a lot of people who don't speak English as a first language, they just think of GIMP as just the name of the software. It doesn't really occur to a lot
Even
of people.
Even I, who speak English as a first language, like the word GIMP is, I would say at this point, kind of archaic. Nobody calls each other fucking GIMPs anymore. It's something you'll read in a Dickens novel more than something you'll encounter in real life. I mean, and also, if you've used Linux for a week, you've encountered the word GIMP more in the context of the image editor than in the context of, you know, a disability or whatever. Anyway, so then it's a divergent meaning, so who fucking cares? And like what you said, it precludes corporations from...
Yeah, that's the thing. It's
great.
Yeah. I think we should...
Also, call it JOMP, if you want.
JOMP, yeah. I wish we did that more with anti-corporate I don't want to say like self-sabotage, anti-corporate
punkness.
Just make things deliberately. That's what I kind of like about the
that's why I don't like names like Luanthi. It's the opposite of punk. Luanthi is like what bourgeois people think is sophisticated.
Whereas mind test is like...
Let's take this word from this other culture, and that's sophisticated. We're always sophisticated now because Ubuntu. Yeah, that's where, you know, like, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Whereas, like, muck miner. That's what we should call it. Muck miner.
What a great name.
Oh, what a great name. God, I just thought of that just now. Muck my... Oh, we should... Yeah, we should do a change.org partition. Change Luanti to Muck Miner.
Get Parliament to argue about what this game should be.
Muck Miner. Do a fork and just call it Muck Miner. It's easy to remember. It's easy to remember. That's the thing.
Exactly. Well, that's exactly it. Yeah, yeah. When it's just some like, yeah. Okay. Mm. What language is the word Luanti from?
I haven't a clue. But like I always feel like this feeds back into what you were saying about the like people trying to adopt this like marketing friendly attitude because they think it makes themselves and it's like, but like you just blend into the background. It's like you want to be successful, so you start acting like everybody else. Like it's a faulty logic, or it's a
feedback loop thing, because I do think the public's expectations are set by these things. Public's expectations are set by what like, corporate sites look like, and then that becomes what professionalism looks like. But
if you meet every expectation,
we should be rejecting that.
And if you meet every expectation, you'll just become invisible. Like you need to have, you need to be, you know, you need to be novel or different or whatever, you know, like yourself, authenticity. You know, people love authenticity when it's, you know, authentic.
Yeah. Yeah. Also, the kind of people who are going to even look at free software in the first place. Again, it's open source versus free software again, isn't it? It's making yourself. It's respectability politics essentially, without obviously the racial component. We're decent normal people who like business.
Exactly. Yeah. And
Luanti, by the way, it's Lua plus the Finnish word Luanti, which means creation.
Oh, okay. Oh, because Lua for the language.
What language it's in. Who fucking gives a shit? Muckminer. Devs of Luanti, we know you're watching. Call it fucking...
Yeah, Muckminer. Muckminer.
Muckminer. Oh, yeah, no. You know how open source projects are always like spelled one way, but they insist it's pronounced another, like Godo or fucking whatever. It should be Muckminer, but it's insistent that you pronounce it in a Northern British accent.
Muckminer.
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 Pronunciation guide, IPA for Muckminer.
I've got a world. Well, not a world. I've got a project that I'm building. I haven't touched it in years. But I kind of want to get back in. I kind of want to get back into it because it's so relaxing to just sit there, doze out, and just like build some junk. In Muckminer, yeah. Creative mode.
Yeah.
Like I everyone always talks about the games and the survival mode and all this kind of stuff. I just want Lego. That's all I want. I just want to build fun stuff.
I think what I would want is what Minecraft was way, way back in the day during the alphas, before it became a shit RPG, when it was gathering the resources and then building something with the resources. I want both. I think you just want infinite resources, build a thing, right?
Yeah.
I want to have to work for it. this is my labor that went, you know, like, yeah, I want that, but I don't want the fucking farming and hunger and fighting. I don't want any of that. I just want mining stuff and building stuff.
Yeah. I mean, I like that with like Project Zomboid and like Don't Starve Together, which are games that you're not particularly fond of, are you?
No, not really.
No, but I, I get the enjoyment out of those, but when it comes to just mind test, Muck Miner, Luante, Muck Miner.
So you put my mind onto a tangent mentioning survival games. Have you been there when we've, this has become a bit of a thing in the Discord. Have you looked at a game called Mad Island?
No, I don't have a clue. Never heard of it.
Are we still on YouTube? I would recommend that you don't look it up right now, but given that we're not on YouTube anymore, have a look at Mad Island on Steam and have a look at all the screenshots.
But why not on YouTube? What does the YouTube difference?
You'll see when you see the screenshots.
Oh, right. Oh, okay. All right. Sorry. So Mad Island.
Yeah.
Is Hamish going to be mad?
I don't know. I don't know if we make Hamish.
Okay. All right. I'm sorry. Okay. Not on YouTube. Oh, here we go. Going in. We're going in together, folks. Oh, I've got to sign in.
Oh, no.
Right, hold on a minute. I got to sign into Steam because I'm using
LibreWolf.
LibreWolf, that's the one. Okay. So I'm signing into Steam. And it's gonna want two-factor authentication, I reckon.
Sorry about this. I made it very awkward.
Oh, okay. Email authentication. Okay. Okay. All right. Da-da-da. Come on, Steam. Okay, Steam's, come on, Steam. There we go. Okay. Okay, there we go.
I'll go through the screenshots with you, so
okay.
Let me know when you're on the first screenshot.
There we go. All right, we're on Mad Island. All right, sorry, Hamish. This game may, not be appropriate for all ages. What the heck?
Okay, we're on the first screenshot?
Yes.
Okay, so at first glance, fairly normal. Looks like a crafting survival type game, like a farming kind of game.
Everything is having sex.
There are some pigs fucking. Then there's, if you look in the top right, there's a lady impaled on some kind of obsidian pole. Mm-hmm. And then in the background, there seem to be some women who are being milked.
Right, I see.
Okay,
yes.
And we carry on to the second screenshot. Okay. Just an old one. So just some like festivities happening in a tent or something.
Okay, yeah, pigs also there. Carry on. Yeah.
The third speaks for itself. We'll gloss over the third.
Okay, all right, yeah, okay. Next one, four, yeah.
Fourth is just odd. Okay, we'll carry on. There are a lot of screenshots, so we'll skip mm-hmm. through these. Let's go to today. Okay, I would spend some time on the eighth screenshot. That's a detail from the first screenshot that's just a bit more highlighted.
Okay, so we're on to number seven. Okay, that's the milking. I see, yeah.
So we've got some milking going on there. Nine is, that's fairly standard. Okay, that one's fine.
Okay. Yep.
11 is an odd one.
That is an odd one.
These are going to get worse.
I don't.
Okay. 14 is something.
All right.
15, 16. Okay.
Yeah. 70,
20, 80. 20 is something going on 20.
20, okay. Okay, yeah. But I'm not entirely sure what any of this is.
21, 22.
Oh, there's some scissoring.
Something happening 22.
There. 22. Okay, yeah. Oh, dear. That's not good. No.
24. So this is a game. So I pirated this and gave it a try out of fucking pure morbid curiosity. Right? Mm-hmm. And it is, on the one hand, it is a crafting survival game.
Mm-hmm.
It's also a game where you can kidnap and rape tribal women from the island that you're stranded on, mm-hmm. and also do involuntary surgeries on them.
Okay.
So cut off their limbs. You can also put limbs on other people. You can sort of make monsters, basically. Specifically out of women. Possibly men too. I'm not sure. But you can only rape women. So there's that. So and on the Discord, this sort of sparked a conversation about, like, should this be banned, essentially? And I'll lay out, while you're thinking, I'll lay out my thoughts on this, right? So this game is deplorable. It's disgusting. The things you can do in this game are disgusting. But also, 90% of games are about you murdering people.
Mm-hmm.
Which is also disgusting. I do think that fiction in general is, we always have, and we should use it to explore our dark sides. Playing a game about something disgusting doesn't necessarily mean that you want to do it. you want to do it in real life or anything like that. It is just a way of exploring. You know, we play games where we murder people all the time. You know, we played Divinity and we massacred entire villages, you know. So I think games is exploring your dark side, exploring humanity's dark side. I think that's a good, healthy thing. But so I don't think this should be banned. I think this should exist. But it does make me very uncomfortable at the same time.
I mean, there's a few questions when you say, should it be banned? The first is that, like, should Steam sell it, right? Because there's one argument you made is, like, if you want to attach your name to this and sell this yourself, that's on you.
Yeah.
But I don't know, if I was running Steam...
I do think there's a little bit, there's something particularly like sort of kind of American where we are more squeamish about, I mean, this is sexual violence, so maybe this should
be. Yeah, like, yes.
So we're more squeamish about sexual stuff than we are about violence in video games. We're perfect, hacking people apart and, you know, all kinds of like horrific violence we're very normalized to. And I think that's an important context. I do think that needs bearing in mind. But as soon as it becomes sexual, but yeah, I think even, I mean, there are people, women, I've known women who, have, if this is too far for freebooters, let me know. But I've known women who have rape fantasies. You know, as a fantasy, they enjoy, that does not mean that they want to be raped or they would want to, it's what we enjoy in our fantasy life is not necessarily what we would want, or usually is not what we would want in reality. And I think a lot of things seem to miss that. And I think being too negative about this game is tantamount to, you know, the like being Alan Titchmarsh, you know, video games cause violence, blah, blah, blah.
Does Alan Titchmarsh peddle that?
Yeah. He's really about video games cause. Yep.
Really? Alan Titchmarsh? Yeah. Oh, man.
Yeah, he's very reactionary. Yeah, he's a piece of shit.
I never liked him on the...
No. He's always 10 courses annoying. So I was sort of glad when I heard that. It was like it fit.
Oh yeah,
but I think Steam's approach is if it's not illegal, we'll allow it. Now they used to be different, but I think as long as it doesn't break laws, they will allow it on. But I will also add that there is a DLC for this game that you cannot get through Steam, and what that DLC does is adds children into the game.
Okay, I don't know. So,
I've thrown a very big topic at you, to be
That's
fair.
A big topic. The after work.
After work. After we were just discussing McDonald's or whatever.
Yeah. I don't know, is the thing, because it's like, it's not actually hurting anyone.
No.
Like, no one, like, it's not like, you know, people are going to go out, like it's not like the harm is caused or even realistically depicted.
No, it's a very cartoony game. I mean, yeah. I'm not censorious. I think I lean free speech, which is becoming rarer on the left, which I think is a problem. I very much lean free expression. You know, if it's illegal, then it's illegal, and we don't have to have this conversation because it's illegal. But yeah, I lean free expression. I lean the arts are the place to explore our dark sides. I think that's a healthy thing for us to do as a civilization. And I think if I can see a case for banning this because it is disgusting. But if you ban this, I think you have to ban Marquis de Sade. 100 Days of Sodom, or whatever. That's the right book, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I guess, like, I mean it's Steam's decision, right? Like,
it is Steam's decision, yeah. But it's more like your feeling. Just what's your gut reaction to it? Because my gut is, this shouldn't be on Steam. This is disgusting. But then when I think about it more, I'm like, is that right?
My gut always goes, it's a picture. It can't hurt you. But
yeah.
I don't know if that is me, being out of tune with something. Do you know what I mean?
I think like, we also, And I think this is true. I think this becomes true in politics as well. I think we might overestimate how seriously people, like if somebody's got a couple hundred hours in this game, I think we sort of default to assuming that they're engaging it with it very seriously. And the same with political stuff. I think we default to assuming that these people are really into this, committed to this, rather than just fucking around and laughing at it.
Yeah. I mean, is it any different than pictures of Muhammad? You know, there are places in the world where you get prosecuted for that. I was going to say get your head chopped off. I don't know if that's true or not.
I
might be being a bit racist there, to be honest. I don't know.
No, there are certainly, you know, in something.
I wouldn't draw a picture of Muhammad in Afghanistan right about now. You know,
I think that keys into something where I do think censorship is a slippery slope.
I mean, when we're talking about an actual, like a manufactured image, like a drawing, like I think you've got to ask the question of like, what's the harm and where does the harm come in and who does the harm affect?
I think I could see a game where that is harmful, even if the presentation was quite cartoony. If the game's thesis, because games do make points. Mm-hmm. If the game is trying to make the point that sexual abuse is good and you should do it, then I would have more questions about it. Even then, I wouldn't. I mean, yeah, I don't know. It is complex.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. Like, these questions are always difficult to me. Like, there was the time when the guy got, like, in the UK, and in America this might be slightly different. There was years ago, there was this case where a guy got shot. A burglar got shot. Someone was being robbed, and they shot the burglar. I don't think they gave the burglar any warning. So it was just one day, you know, like they just came down, they panicked and shot the burglar. And then there was this big debate. I know Anne Widdecombe was getting involved and everything and saying, like, he should have had the right to defend his home. The burglar was in on their property. Yeah. And then other people saying, yeah, but he was burglaring the home. Like, it's like.
That's the Tories, even at that time, trying to ape the American Republic. Because in America, you do have the right to defend your property. I mean, it's not universal. In some states, I think in most states, you can, if somebody intrudes into your house, you can shoot them. That's considered self-defense.
Is it like Castle Doctrine or something like that? Castle Doctrine,
yeah. Mm. Whereas in the UK, we've never quite had that. I mean, that comes from liberalism, that idea that property is sacrosanct. We've never quite gone that far in the UK. We don't think that like property is worth doing harm over, generally speaking. And I that's where I come down. You can't.
But then at that point, I struggle because it's like, but the person could very well have been fearful of their life. Like,
if you are fearful of your life, then it's just self-defense. Then you don't need the Catholic doctrine.
Is someone breaking into your house an act of violence against you? I suppose that does that depend on the house. If it's like a,
I don't think it is unless I mean, if you're just hearing noises downstairs and you go downstairs and you find them, then you could then fear for your life. I know I believe that in self-defense cases, they very much what matters is how the person who did the defending feels. I don't think there's the burden of proof that you have to prove that you felt a particular way. Just like if you feel under threat, then that's enough justification. Then it becomes about reasonable force. And I think shooting somebody is not reasonable force. unless they're actively, you know, if they're coming at you with an axe or something, you know, then sure.
I mean, it's not the way I would handle it, right? Like, I'd handle it the TV programs I've seen basically say, if that happens, gather everyone up, barricade yourself in a room, and call 999. And that's, you know, you wait it out.
Like a burglar, generally speaking, does not want to get into a violent confrontation. That's the last thing.
I mean, it's one thing to say, like, if you're insured, is it, you know, like, that's no problem at all, right? No, okay, no, I'm not saying no problem at all. But if you're insured, You should generally be okay.
It's traumatizing. It's horrible. It's not a pleasant thing to go through. But yeah, we'll put self defense aside because self defense law is already established, and I agree with it. Yeah, if you feel feel under threat, then you're allowed to react violently. But is there any cash amount of property that you believe it's okay to kill somebody to protect?
No.
Yeah, I mean, same for me. I don't even think there's a cash amount of property I think it's worth causing physical harm to somebody over. Like, if somebody's trying to get my laptop off me and I punch them in the face to stop them, fair enough, right? They run away. Yeah. I've still got my laptop.
But also, they can expect a punch in the face, right? That's like, do you know what I mean? Like it's not like... If you're walking down with a laptop and someone's like, oh, give me that laptop, it's like they know that there is a possibility that you will fight back with with a fist. Yeah. If you just pull out a gun and just shoot them there and then, that's, I don't want to say a surprise. I mean, it is a surprise, but it's like, it's a bit out of pocket. It's a bit unreasonable. It's a bit over escalated.
This also all plugs into a right wing framing of crime, doesn't it? Where it's an individual pathologized thing rather than a social problem.
Yeah. You know,
the cause of crime is poverty. And if somebody breaks into my house and steals my TV, that's a lot of risk they're going to. Most people probably wouldn't see it this way, but like, to me, if somebody comes and steals my TV, they needed it more than I do. If you're willing to go to those lengths to get that TV, then you needed that value more than I did.
Burglaring...
If you're a poor person getting burgled.
Yeah. But the thing is as well is that, like, if you're stealing stuff because of poverty, chances are you're stealing it from businesses, right? Like, as the cost of living increases, we have seen, like, a rise in shoplifting. I don't know if we've seen, like, a rise in burglaries. I
mean, burglary, if you want to get something... If you want to make... shoplifting, it would be hard to shoplift something with the value of a laptop or a TV or something like that, right? Whereas burgling, most houses these days are going to have a laptop in them. And if you see a door open or a window unlocked or something, probably a fairly easy way to get a laptop.
I don't know.
Okay, before next episode, we need to both go out and do a burglary and see how easy it is.
how hard the burglars have it.
Yeah. And then if we get caught, obviously it's just a prank. It's for a YouTube video.
It's like a social experiment. That's the technical.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, going back, should it be banned? I mean, yeah, it comes back to Steam.
The moral problem is that this game is making sexual violence a mechanic, and therefore, when you're playing the game, you are having fun doing something that simulates you're kidnapping women, raping them, whatever. It's sexual violence turned into a game, and that is, I'm not happy about that. I don't like that. But then again, 90% of the games we play murder. Yeah. It's fun. we are having fun doing murder.
Yeah.
So if you're banning that, you kind of got to ban that. And I see the case for banning that. But then if there's a case for banning that, you've got to ban the other, surely.
But also books. Have you read what's in books these days?
Books, these are films. I mean, especially in the 80s, in the 80s, action films, they would just use rape as a motivation for the male protagonist. But, his wife gets raped and, it's so fucking common.
Yeah. I always feel like it does feel like there's a puritanism to some of this because, like, there's a lot of books even nowadays that are seen as not necessarily relatively benign, but like, there's a lot of like child abuse in and sexual violence and other all kinds of trauma.
Often read, and I would say most often by women, dodgy sexual situations as fantasy, right? Power imbalances of various kinds.
50 Shades of Grey.
From sexual abuse. That's probably the tamest end of things. But as fantasy. And again, this is that you've got to make a distinction between what people enjoy as fantasy and not assume that they want to do those things in real life. So there's that. And then also the fact that it is yeah, and I mean, I'm repeating myself really, but an exploration of our dark sides, which I do think is healthy and fit, you know, from Marquis de Sade all the way through to this.
Yeah, so when you say banned, do you mean like make it illegal?
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know what I mean, really. Just like it should be kicked off Steam, should it? Yeah, yeah.
Because I'd understand if Steam wanted, like, Steam's job is to make a business, you know, is to do a business.
Yeah.
So if they,
I like Steam's policy of if it's legal, it's allowed. Because why should a corporation be the arbiters of culture? What's acceptable and not acceptable in culture? I'd be more uncomfortable with that than, you know, because we do have laws, you know, decency laws, and we've got quite stringent decency laws in this country.
Mm. Yeah. I wouldn't draw a line in particular would be, does it infringe on someone's dignity? I guess that might be one.
Characters in the game or real people or a class of people? Because an argument will be made that we are white men, we have privilege. This is a game that sexual violence is specifically, you know, it leans on a power gradient in society where men have more power and blah blah, and let's say, you know, utilizing the power over. I don't put much weight in the argument myself. Like that implies that we are not people with empathy and understanding and ability, you know, ability to understand the experiences of other people. It's not about that for me.
If these were real people who had not in any way consented to be in this game, I would feel infinitely more uneasy about it.
Mm. Or if it were the same game, but exactly the same mechanics, but first person with the graphical quality of, say, a Skyrim or something, then I think it would feel a bit different.
Yeah. But then where do you draw that line between realism? What level of realism then?
Yeah, that is a problem, yeah. Because I would be more disturbed by it then, but I still don't think. Again, I think the in our countries, I think the law generally has it about right, and if it's legal, it should be allowed. I can still argue against it as a piece of art. Say that I find this disgusting. I think the way this depicts sexual abuse is reprehensible. I'll make the same case for Call of Duty, the way it depicts violence. You know, I can still have an opinion against these things without calling for them necessarily to be censored or whatever.
You could argue, I'm not super familiar with Call of Duty, but you could argue that a lot of these military shooters do glorify violence in a way that...
funded by the DOD to do so.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is one of their purposes, yeah.
So, but, I mean, I don't think it's making society more violent to have Call of Duty exist.
I think it's part of the way we are propagandized into, you know, war being normalized. I do think it's part of that machinery. But I don't think it's if you get rid of Call of Duty, it's not going to end global war.
Yeah, but then you'd have to get rid of The Great Escape, and you'd have to get rid of...
The Great Escape doesn't really justify violence, actually. Great Escape.
Actually, no, Great Escape is slightly different, isn't it? Because it's
a counter-example of a war film, yeah.
Yeah, I shot myself in the foot there.
In fact, the Nazi guard at the camp in The Great Escape is portrayed quite sympathetically.
I don't think they're Nazis. I think they're German military, right?
Yeah, but during the time, they're Nazis.
Well, yeah, but they're distinct from, like, the SA or whatever it is, that, you know.
Yeah. And eventually the camp guard is too soft on the prisoners and gets deposed. The SS brings in somebody, or whoever brings in somebody more, Gestapo, whatever it is.
Yeah.
But I know what you mean, yeah.
Yeah. Like, because I don't know, like, I don't... Like, if you were less Nazi-esque, like, yeah, I don't know. Like, I don't know this much about, like, the interpersonal sort of ideas of Germans at this time, but like it seems to me like it's possible that you could be in the German military and not necessarily be particularly fond of Hitler.
Oh no, for sure. Yeah. I mean, you were a Nazi by virtue of being in the Nazi
in the army. Yeah.
Whether you were a Nazi in your heart is a very different thing. But
it's like every American in the army is a big fan of Trump. Like, as I understand it, a lot of people in the American military don't really like Trump that much.
Yeah, I think the officer class of the American army actually leans a bit left of the general public, even.
Quite possibly, yeah.
Yeah, which, you know, they're all, you have to be college educated for a start to be an officer in the US military. But yeah, this is something that came up in Discord as well, weirdly. We watched a particular episode of Deep Space Nine, which kind of touches on these issues, but how, like, it's like World War II ends. At what point do you stop holding people responsible? You know, like, okay, if you're in the arm, you know, if you're one of the ones giving the orders, then sure, that's quite clear. If you're just a soldier carrying out the orders, I don't think we did tend to prosecute for that. And then down to, you know, if you ran a cafe and you served Nazis, you know, like, where do you draw the line of, and then, you know, asking people to imagine, what would you do in that situation? Because it's very easy to imagine that, yeah, or we'd be in that situation, I would be, you know, I'd be an objector, and but probably most of us would collaborate.
I struggle with this one too, because it's one thing to, like, we as people on the left ideally would get our agendas over by peaceful discussion and bringing people over to our side. And in order to do that, you need to engage with the system, and you need to engage with people that you disagree with. How far along the disagreement do you go before you just start?
I'm okay. Historically, I think there are situations which call for violent change.
Yeah.
And I think violent change is the right approach. But I also, there are times in history when that call for peaceful cooperation. And I'd be willing, if any party, including like Reform, whatever, the BNP, if they'll work with me to nationalize water, for example, then on that one specific thing, I will work with them to nationalize water.
But you're talking about a situation, maybe a coalition government, right?
Or even just an agreement, just not
a
socialist party, and you know,
no.
But just an agreement. We will vote together on this bill. We both want this. We'll vote together on this bill. I'm quite happy to vote with the BNP on a single issue while disagreeing with them about everything else. I think politicians need to do that more.
Yeah, I mean the big problems with that is, of course, the shadow government rather than the fringe parties, although like Reform are picking up a lot of support these days.
Oh yeah, electorally it's looking great for Reform. It's a perfect storm for them, really. The Labour Party's lurched to the right, and who's going to vote for a right-wing Labour Party when you've got the Tories, the Lib Dems and the Reform to vote for, and the Tory Party's shitting its pants essentially.
Yeah, it is the perfect storm for them. I cannot fathom how Keir Starmer and his advisors are thinking what they're doing is at all a good idea. Like, it just boggles the mind. It's like, the thing about Keir Starmer, he's not very good at being right-wing. You know, like, it's just like, Nigel Farage, great at being right-wing. Sells the ideas, well. Well, yeah, like, you can't deny it. Nigel Farage, effective politician. Like, he's what founded like three parties.
Effective politician, probably in my lifetime. Yeah,
yeah. And he founded like three parties.
Yeah,
and they've all been a threat to the establishment.
Barely been elected. Barely had any electoral success at any time. The EU elections at one point, yeah, because nobody votes in those, and they managed to motivate their base. But yeah, no actual electoral success. But in terms of influence and the policy and the direction of this country, enormous fucking success. And
here's the thing.
Itself for the left.
And Labour are shooting themselves in the foot in Wales. Well, Keir Starmer is shooting Welsh Labour in the foot. Welsh Labour, generally, relatively well-liked, especially when it was the Tories were the ones in Westminster government. And they're in a bit of a tailspin at the moment. They're struggling to find themselves after Mark Drakeford, really. And Reform... And they've pushed through some electoral reforms, more proportional representation, that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And they kind of have maybe opened the door a little bit too much just for Reform to just come swanning in, which is a bit worrying.
I don't think the chances that the Nazis could get in should ever be an argument against electoral reform. That's a separate problem, I think.
Yeah, no, for sure. But Labour have definitely, like, strategically speaking, Labour have screwed themselves.
Yeah, and I also think it's important. This is another thing I mentioned to Gosney earlier. So fascism or right-wing populism, whichever way you want to call it, is clearly on the rise, right? The extreme ends of politics are stronger than they've been for a long time. The fascists didn't cause that. Fascists didn't come externally in and impose, you know, promote fascism. Liberals are to blame. Liberals, you know, through austerity, neoliberalism, all of these policies, all reducing the strength of the state, reducing the wealth of the state, and reducing the wealth of ordinary people and giving it to capital for 40 years has opened the door to fascism. And they keep doubling down on that policy. The enemy is not fascists at the moment. The fascists are looming. The enemy is the fucking liberals who are creating these conditions.
Yeah, and the reason for that is that, a demonstration of that, right? You remember Nick Griffin, right? That sliver of the BNP, there has always been that little avenue that we could have gone down any time into fascism, right? It's not like they've just suddenly appeared out of nowhere. There was always, like herpes or something, you know? Like, it's just like, it's there, it's always there. You know, and it's like it's flaring up now, and it's flaring up in a way that it probably hasn't ever before. And it's an international thing for sure, but but we are participating in that every bit as much as you know, Macron or Biden.
Those conditions were created by, you know, your Thatchers, your Reagans, your Bill Clintons, your Blairs, and everybody since. And Keir Starmer is doubling down on the thing that got us here.
Yeah,
and I don't down on the thing that opened the door for fascism.
I don't know why he does this, right? Because
I don't understand what's happening.
Because, like, he doesn't strike me as being hugely ideological. In fact, a lot of people around him seem to say he's not particularly ideological. Which, okay, you can understand. Like that often will mean Labour, New Labour-y, you know, sort of centre-ish Labour. But like, he seems to be like just the right. He just seems to be the right, like.
The only theory I've got, and it's not a particularly strong one, but if you look at Keir Starmer pre him running for Labour leadership, right, the only thing he cared about was the EU.
Okay, yeah.
Literally the only thing he cared about was the referendum was wrong, we should have another referendum, we should rejoin the EU. That is a single issue person. Then he runs for Labour leadership and he claims to be a socialist, and then he, you know, that falls away and then he's opposite. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so my theory is that he's willing to sacrifice everything to get as close as he can get to getting us back in the EU. And there was that recent deal with, I don't know, I barely pay attention to the news, but some deal with the EU where closer ties.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And that's my only theory. He's literally sacrificing everything. He's doing the most right so that, you know, to deflect criticism from the right. Because it would be reform that would have the complaints about closer ties with EU. So, like, double down on everything reform wants, cut benefits because dole scroungers, blah, 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 talk about immigration being awful, all that stuff, everything that the right wants, and we'll sneak this EU thing in. That's my only theory, is that he cared so much about fucking EU that he's willing to, you know, accrue all this right-wing capital in order to expend it on that.
There are some ways that he seems to not take advantage of that. Like he wants closer ties with the states, trade ties, which is obviously.
I'm not sure he does want close ties with the states. I just think he doesn't want to denormalize relationship with the states. If it's tariffs or that, then he'll choose that, which I think is just take the fucking tariffs, fuck the states, have closer ties with Russia and China. Russia, an awful country, but it's a natural trading partner for Europe. You cannot fucking ignore that.
No, absolutely. And we everything we make for Christmas is coming from China. Like, I always think of this as like the war on Christmas, yet you're going to badmouth China. If you're badmouthing China, you're part of the war on Christmas. Just
Christmas take, you know, is brought to you by China.
Christmas is brought to you by Santa the CCP.
Doesn't live in the North Pole anymore, or in Lapland.
Why do you think Santa wears red? Chinese agent, Chinese asset, just is. There's that whole village in China where they just make Christmas tat. I no more plastic tat, China. Come on, come on. We've got enough. It's going to last forever. Where did it go? Where does the Christmas tat go?
You went very Trumpian then. We had enough.
Too much Christmas tat.
But where is the left wing Trump? Where is the? I don't mean a dumbass when I say the left wing Trump. I say it's somebody who gets how normal people want you to talk.
Well, we had him, Mick Lynch, and then he retired. Goodbye.
Yeah. Mick Lynch was great.
I mean, he was great for his role as a union guy. I don't like.
I think he could have been. I don't mean he could have gone from that into politics, but I think, yeah, that's exactly the kind of charisma we need, I think. Yeah.
I don't think he's necessarily as, like, multifaceted enough to be in politics, but he was great as what he was, like, as a union guy.
The lesson from Trump, and to an extent Farage and so on, is somebody a bit rougher, somebody a bit less polished, less aligned with bourgeois values, willing to make mistakes, willing to lie. Because I think one of the reasons people like Trump is, of course, when he's lying, of course, they know, for the most part, or depending on the kind of lies, but they know he's lying, but they feel like he's lying for them.
Yeah.
He's playing the game for them to win, and part of that is lying. I want somebody who will lie for us, willing to lie for us.
Yeah, I mean, I guess so. I mean,
within the game of politics,
So the thing about Trump, like, Trump is bad at a lot of things, but he's great at getting attention. Like, that's the one thing he's good at. Maybe there's some others that I don't know about.
He's funny, right? Yeah. From his primary debates, he's funny.
Yeah,
and when I say he talks like a normal person, I don't mean normal people talk like dumbasses. I said when he talks like a normal person, if he's irritated, he's irritable. He says something irritable. You know, if somebody says something dumb to him, he says some, you know, dumb, childish insult back. He talks about how big his dick is, and that's not something one would encourage. But, you know, the fucking primary debate for the leadership of the Republican Party, he talked about how big his dick is.
Yeah.
And again, I don't want that.
How big his hands are? Should we be like?
I want somebody who's human with all the frailties and failings of somebody human. Somebody's human, impassioned, and cares.
Yeah, yeah. That was like what
Bernie was to a large extent was.
Yeah. I mean, like Corbyn wasn't terrible. He was just torpedoed. In a lot of cases,
he would have won without if he weren't torpedoed for sure. But he also wasn't. He wasn't charismatic, and I think he was sort of. He had some quality. He had sort of an avuncular thing going on.
Well, I mean, our version of Trump is Farage, I reckon. Do you think?
Yeah.
So,
but Trump is very much pound shop Trump. In terms of achievements, I think he's actually achieved quite a lot. But in terms of presentation, he feels very...
Raj's... Yeah.
His appeal has a feeling.
Yeah, but also, like, I mean... Yeah, I sometimes think he tries a little bit too hard to be Trump. Like, there was that thing on GB News where it was like, a pint with Nige, you know, or something like that. And it's just like, oh, you're trying a little bit too hard. Everyone knows his name. You know, they're the one he thinks about when they tick reform on the local elections. Yeah. They're not voting for the local people.
And another thing is important is liberals will fucking whine about why do you give Farage so much time on the BBC? You don't give the Greens that much time on the BBC. Like in a very fucking whiny fucking tone that they're so good at. And it's very simple. It's because he's fucking entertaining.
Yeah, that's
it. Green leaders, Caroline Lucas, I respect her a great deal. Very smart, very intelligent woman. She's not fucking entertaining.
No, yeah, no, you're right there.
It's TV. If you know, that's, I'm not saying that's something we should aim for, even necessarily. But that's you're asking this question whinily for the last fucking 20 years, and the answer is because he's fucking entertaining.
Yeah, it's TV. They want numbers. The TV people want the numbers. And nowadays, like, data is king, right? Like, in the olden days, we never really knew exactly very much how much people watch the telly. But, like, now, we know how much people... We know when people are switching off. We've got social media. We know what people think. Like, we have too much information, far too much information about everything.
What was the woman co-leader of the Greens last election? What was her name?
Oh, Carla Denyer.
Carla. She... not on the level of Trump or whatever, but she had the capacity to be entertaining. I think unleash her a bit. Remove the polish, remove all the focus group, you know, presentation coach bullshit,
yeah,
and let her be herself and say what she thinks. Because there's a couple of, in those debates, there's a couple of when you could see the real her was coming through and she was snapping back at people, and it was great. That's what we need.
Yeah, totally. I think she's very good for her area as well. She's very Bristolian, very central Bristol. Yeah. She's got that. Yeah. I mean, this is a bit hard because, like, Greens always get a hard time for being too weird, right? But, like, I kind of think she should be a bit, like, more Bristolian, a bit central Bristol, a bit more...
I think weird is good so long as it's not just the same kind of weird and a kind of weird. We need all the kinds of weird. We need, you know, yet again, more human.
Yeah.
Again, that's why people like Farage. You know, liberals will point out his faults and his failings and his contradictions, but that's partly what people are attracted to, because that reads as a fucking human being. Is what the fuck is Keir Starmer? Is he a human being?
Well, he's a lawyer, so no.
Keir Starmer is not a fucking human being.
He was the only reason Keir Starmer is there is because he was a torpedo for Jeremy Corbyn. That's really it, right?
Yeah. But Kamala as well, not a fucking human being. Biden.
She was a bit more real. Biden's more of a hit?
I think it, for the American audience, I think he has that folksy, I'm a normal dude kind of energy.
I like the bit where he wanders off to the left. He's got someone's got a weird, like, pull him back. Oh, no, you're off this way, Mr. President.
Bernie was great. I mean, Bernie was 100% sabotage. He would have won that primary, and I believe he would have won that election. He was 1,000,000% sabotaged.
See, this is where I get my pessimism from. It's like, even if we do find a Trump of the left, they'll get torpedoed.
Yeah. I mean, there's that, nope. I'm sure I've mentioned it before, but there's that, I think there's a novel that was turned into a BBC mini-drama. It was about a normal socialist becoming the prime minister. And it sort of just step by step documents how the deep state would take him down. And up to a point, it was literally what happened to Corbyn. They go, because he's prime minister and they need to do more, they go further. But yeah, it was all the stuff they did to Corbyn and all, you know, Sanders as well. Yeah. I forget what that TV show was called. It was in the 80s. It was very good.
What about getting invaded by China? Is that an option?
Sorry, what do you mean?
Should we get invaded for China by China?
I'm up for it. Yeah,
you know, like, I mean, I remember reading I think it's like a New York Times article or something like that, and it was like, China's failing. All the millionaires are leaving China, and then you read down and you realize that Xi Jinping is like, yeah, he's putting limits on how lavish spend, you know, like on lavish spending. For millionaires. Of course they're going to leave.
There are these economists who are clearly either strongly influenced by or literally funded by the American state to keep talking China down. Very well-known economist, can't remember the name, and some other economist, left economist, can't remember his name either, but he said this person has very successfully predicted 15 of China's last two recessions.
Oh, right.
Which is always very funny.
Oh yes, 15 of China's too low.
book/TV show is called A Very British Coup.
Oh, A Very British Coup.
Very strongly recommend watching of that. It's very good.
Oh, okay, cool. But yeah, no, I mean, yeah, like a what? So a Farage of the left. The trouble is, I can't think of anyone without going liberal. You know, and you're not going to want a liberal. You're not going to want a Farage liberal.
I mean, given the Tories have turned into a far right party, Labour has turned into a far right party. It's not inconceivable that liberals could turn into a socialist party.
This is where I think it's possible if anyone who's firmly on the left joins Liberal Democrats. And shifts their policy leftward. All their policies voted on. Anyone can.
If that's going to happen, why not the Greens, who are more naturally
Greens as well? Have you know? They can have Green Liberal alliances. You can have electoral packs.
That's split it. We need to pick one.
yeah, but like that's where electoral packs come in. Like it has happened before with some success, where you know Greens and Liberals just divvy up an area.
Yeah, but because we're first past the post, and a lot of the places where the Greens would do well are also places where the Libs would do well. They're going to be splitting each other's votes. I think we need to pick one.
Well, I mean, the Greens are
already not to stand against each other.
That's why that's what I mean by electoral packs.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. They'd have to like carve out some things there because, you know, I mean.
It's simpler to just pick one of them, I think. Because, first of all, we need the unions to abandon Labour. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. Do you reckon the unions will abandon Labour, or do you reckon they're just...
I mean, something worth bearing in mind, I think. I mean, I'm very pro-union. I'm very, you know, everybody should join a union. The unions need to be more powerful. But there are some right-wing unions.
What about, like, the police union? I mean, I know in the States the police union is very...
Union, of course. I can't remember. There's a particular quite strong union that...
Farmers union?
No, it's a general union, I think, a sort of an umbrella union. But they lean right, and any time it comes to actually voting for anything remotely socialist, they always vote the other way. But most unions are obviously leftist, got a very strong...
But isn't... Hang on a minute. Like, isn't... For the like to me, in my mind, and maybe I've got this all wrong... Like left-wing stuff, at its core, at its root value, it's working class advocacy, right? Like, you know, if you are just, you know, if you've got a job, if you're just like a regular person, you know, maybe even a small business owner or whatever, like, and you're advocating for yourself, you're advocating for left-wing stuff, right? There may be exceptions here,
but it might be limited to a very narrow view of the economic sphere. They might be advocating for better paying conditions for them and their workers, but any time where it's like something that would be better for, you know, carbon production, but would...
But I don't think of the environment as a left-right issue. Like, either the environment's going to fuck us or it's not. Like...
Well, it has become a left-right issue. It's a left-right issue in that capitalism is geared to not care about it.
I think, here's a capitalism take on environmentalism. Maybe, and I'm being a bit comedic with this, or a bit like hyperbolic. But, right, we have a problem. Earth is burning up. Some company invests in a geoengineering machine to clean the air.
Isn't geared to long term, is the problem with that. They're geared to, and they're not even geared to profit. They're geared to
share price. But what if Nvidia, for example, build a massive machine? I don't know why not Nvidia builds a massive machine that claims to scrub the air and undo carbon monoxide poisoning, and then I don't know, sell it to either a government or a whatever. And that allows oil companies to continue drilling. That allows AI companies to continue doing whatever the fuck.
One of the reasons why capitalism tries to distract with things like carbon scrubbing, which are not viable technologies.
But I'm talking about if this was a viable thing, right? If this magic technology could basically,
I mean, if that were a viable thing, then capitalism would be able to carry on what it's doing, and the environment wouldn't get fucked. But that's a very like circumstantial.
You can say that's fantastical thinking, you know, that some company will just invent a machine that will fix the planet and then we carry on with capitalism as normal. But it's, you know, it's a line of thinking. Like,
I think it's
a deranged line of thinking.
I think it's missing the point. If a capitalist corporation invented something that would solve global climate change, and without risking capitalism, then of course that would solve climate change and leave us with capitalism. The kind of things that would, you know, we're talking about carbon scrubbing or fusion or something like that, right? And those kind of things don't tend to come out of private investment in the first place. Secondly, nobody's investing in R&D at the moment because it's not profitable because productivity is flat. Or rather, productivity is flat because of that. Because I mean, that gets deep. It's more, you know, share buybacks and property is where money is going. I said that like there was a third thing, but I think it's those two things. Yeah, I think it's just like that would be fine, but I don't think it's possible.
Yeah, but it's the that would be a
from a climate change point of view. I still want to get rid of capitalism.
No, for sure. But like. Yeah, I don't know. I consider environmentalism to be just one of those things.
I understand that your point was going against this, but
if you're left wing, you should be concerned about climate change. If you're right wing, you should be concerned. Like, it's just it's an objective problem outside of the realms of political philosophy, right?
And I do think when you poll people, it's not equal. But like people who vote, you know, Tory in this country, Republic, they do actually care about climate change. But really, in terms of the general public, everybody's really on board with climate change, even in America.
It's just that people don't understand. It's like people care about interest.
I think they understand it and they're on board. But
no, what I mean is they don't understand the steps towards fixing it, right? Like, because there's going to be a lot of things that need to change that we wouldn't even know about, right? Like, there's so many moving parts to what are affecting the climate that your average person on the street, they know that it's a problem. They know the CO2 side of it, maybe, you know, all that kind of stuff. But they're not necessarily going to know how infrastructure is going to need to change.
I think the roadblock there is that capitalism does a lot of marketing to convince people that it isn't the problem, that we can modify capitalism and avert climate change. I think that's the problem. Like, the way to avert climate change is to have a form of government that's capable of thinking in the long term.
Yes.
And that is not capitalism. Therefore, we need to get rid of capitalism to solve climate change.
Isn't
a miraculous invention.
Isn't a lot of liberalism basically trying to make capitalism sustainable?
Yeah, but Marxism says that is a fool's errand. Essentially, it's impossible, which I agree with. I think it always tends. I mean, we had the post-war settlement, the New Deal. For people in the global north, things were pretty good. There was a good balance between capital and state, but because there's no overt constraints on capital, it will always it will act in its interests and accrue more power over time, and that is just inevitable. So you either need these periodic rewinds.
Mm-hmm.
Or you need a system that prevents that from happening in the first place.
Yeah. So, right.
I mean, for a very specific example of that, was it Norway or Sweden, I think, with the Medina plan.
The Medina plan?
I think it was called the Medina plan, where, essentially that it was, because, you know, as we know, so Scandinavia has quite healthy social democracy compared to us.
Mm-hmm.
But in the 70s, there was a move to instigating some socialist policies that would put a sort of permanent check on capital.
Mm-hmm.
And the forces of capitalism were essentially unleashed against this, including ABBA, who very strongly campaigned against these policies. Oh,
they got ABBA on side.
They got ABBA on board, yeah.
Oh, Christ. Were ABBA voluntarily? Are they agents? Do they get paid?
I assume somebody was paying them, yeah.
How much? I'm just gonna
you know, wealthy people.
How wealthy are ABBA? I want to know this. Yeah. 50 years boast to stag. Oh, okay. Yahoo Finance. Okay. Yahoo. Okay. Right. I'll flick that one in there. Okay. So, can you believe it's been 50 years since ABBA burst onto the global music scene? Eurovision. Okay, despite all four being musicians, they didn't start producing. Okay. So, and it's not just the big project, the group also received royalties for their music. Da 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 da. Story continues. Hundreds of millions.
Yeah.
Okay. Benny Anderson, net worth $230 million. Dollars.
This is just according to Google, which seems to be getting it from the South China Morning Post.
Okay.
The total net worth of the legendary pop group now reaches over $1.1
billion. Wow. Yeah, that sort of tails up here.
Each member, $200-300
million. Oh, and also Bitcoin is not doing too well today. Sorry, just a good... and the 5-day average, not great. One month average, better. The 6-month average is better than it was during April. Oh, okay. I chickened out of Bitcoin. I thought having some money on Bitcoin during the Trump era would net me, and I in the end I sold it for about what I bought it for. So.
Has it not gone up under Trump? I would have thought it would have, yeah.
It's probably gone up now, but it was kind of shaky. Oops, I'm sorry, I put the wrong thing up. What was that? Oh, yeah. Yeah, to be honest, it probably is. But at the moment, because of the way things are going, all my savings are in safe things at the moment.
Yeah.
Mostly like bonds-based portfolios and stuff. So, yeah. So,
it's your wrap-up time, right?
Yeah, it's my wrap-up time. So, thank you, everyone, for joining us. Let us know about, should it be banned? Do you know what? I think I'm probably going to like censor the screenshots. People know how to. I think
that's
just
fair. Yeah, that's fair. Yeah.
I'll like pixelate them or something, so you get an idea of it. You can look it up. It's Mad Island. You can look it up yourself if you want to see it. But I, you know, it won't take long. But anyway, thanks for joining us, folks, and we will see you in the next episode. Toodaloo.